Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to another episode of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week, we chat with former Melbourne Demon and West Coast Eagle midfielder, Andy Lovell. Andy, a proud Tasmanian football product, was recruited to the Melbourne Football Club for the 1988 VFL season. He played 22 games in his debut year, which also included the 1988 VFL Grand Final against Hawthorn. During his eight-year stint at the Demons, he played 121 games and kicked 146 goals. In 1996, he made the move to the West Coast Eagles, spending three seasons in the Royal Blue and Gold, playing a further 43 games. In this episode, Andy talks about moving to Victoria to pursue his AFL dream, his debut year of 1988, the difficulty of the 1991 season, his eight-goal haul against the Richmond Tigers, the move to the West Coast Eagles, and his extensive AFL coaching experiences. I hope you enjoy the 83rd member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Andy Lovell. Andy Lovell, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Really looking forward to reminiscing about your journey in the AFL during the 1990s, mate.
Thanks, Trent. Yeah, good to be here, mate. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, before we start, I love finding out what our former players are doing with themselves and whether they still have that football involvement. So what are you doing with yourself currently, mate, and do you still have that footy involvement?
Yeah, look, I do. It's been one hell of a journey, really. 13 years ago, so it's the end of 2010, I was at St Kilda under Rossi Lyon, and I got a job offer to come up and start coaching with the inaugural Gold Coast Suns. So I came up 13 years ago, stayed coaching there for 8 years, and then now I'm actually running the AFL programs at Bond University, so, and coaching their senior women team. So I was out of footy for 3 years and working with the Clontarf Foundation, actually, just mentoring young Aboriginal boys through high school, which was something that I absolutely loved. But my wife called me stupid, but I just couldn't. I had to get back into footy. So here I am back at Bond University.
Have you got a couple of ex-AFL blokes helping you as well? Maddie Kennedy and Sean Hart, I reckon I might have read in a previous article.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really lucky. Like Hardy and Maxie Kennedy, we worked together at the Sun. So we had an association before here and there. But obviously, their footy pedigree speaks for itself, but they're just incredibly good blokes and they've got great knowledge, but mostly just the fact that they're great fellows and we love working together. And like we had a really successful year. We had all four teams make the grand final and we won three premierships. So it was a really enjoyable year. But, you know, it was great to get back to some grassroots footy and just really enjoy it for the love of the game. And then the players were extraordinary. So it was really good fun.
Hey, mate, your VFL journey started with the Melbourne Footy Club in the 80s. How did you make your way to Melbourne? I know you're from Tasmania. So how did you get yourself to Melbourne?
Yeah, it was a bit of a story. So I was playing as a junior. I was playing some decent footy. And I think from memory, the Richmond Footy Club sort of scouted me as early as 12 years old. I think I just started playing year seven footy down in Hobart, and the great Richmond recruiter, Harry Jenkins, contacted mum and dad and said, look, you know, we think this kid's going to be okay. There's a fair bit of water to go under the bridge. But they started sort of coming down and being in contact way back in sort of 83 when I was 12, 13. So, and then leading into that first ever national draft in 86, I think Carlton came and visited. Hawthorn had taken myself and Paul Hudson to three or four grand finals in a row. So I had that sort of a close association with the Hawks as well. And ironically, Melbourne, I hadn't heard from Melbourne Footy Club at all prior to the 86 draft. And so back then it wasn't as big a deal as it is now. So I was in year 10 at school and I got home from school and one of my mates rang me and said, well done, mate, you've been drafted to the Melbourne Footy Club. And I hadn't even spoken to anyone from the D's, so it was a bit of a surprise. But, you know, look, as it turned out, I had a wonderful experience there. They're a great footy club and I'm still great mates with a lot of those guys. Actually, I just went back to a past players reunion run by Rodney Grinter, who runs their past players function. It was just, hadn't been there for 14 years. So it was amazing to go back and see some of the boys.
At the time of joining the D's, Andy, they were a strong outfit. Obviously, the prelim final in 87 and the disappointment. And then obviously, you made your debut in the year of 88. How much drive was the club in that off-season, you know, wanting to go that next step further?
Yeah, it was huge. Really interesting, that transition, because 86, first ever national draft, the D's had been no good for a long, long time. They hadn't won anything. And then I decided to stay and spend one more year at school in Tassie in 87. But fortunately, that's when they got going. And I think history suggests that, you know, they beat the Swans and they beat North Melbourne by huge margins and then made that prelim final. And, you know, that story of Jimmy Steins running over the mark and Buchanahara kicking that long bomb. So they turned the corner really quickly. And there was enormous drive. It was a great time to be at the footy club. It was really exciting. And I think because the Demon supporters have been so starved of success for so long, I think that was part of the whole feeling, that excitement and that anticipation that, you know, we made the prelim final in 87. We had an outstanding year in 88, made the grand final, but, you know, unfortunately came up against one of the greatest dynasties of all time and the Hawthorn Footy Club. And the team that year, they were mind-bogglingly good. So they gave us a hiding. It was a long-winded answer, but the drive was huge. The expectations around, you know, could we go that extra step and win the flag? It was definitely there. And we were thereabouts for a number of years after that, but we just couldn't quite get back to the big dance.
I look at your debut game and I was just reading, you know, leading up into our chat, you played against the Cats in round 3 in 88. That was your first game. It was a tight game and you kicked the sealer in the last quarter. I went back and looked at the YouTube highlights and a riveting goal. That must have been a pretty memorable day.
Yeah, it was. It was extraordinary because, you know, you dream about playing AFL footy all your life and that's all that I ever really wanted to do. And I had my father and his really good mate had flown from Hobart to watch the game. So to have him in the crowd and for it to unfold the way it did, you know, I was really blessed. I think I got the handball from Simon Eichold, I think from memory, and slotted it. So it was a great memory and we beat the Cats. And again, interestingly, Gary Ablett Sr. took a hanger at the other end and missed from about 20 metres out on an angle, which is unbelievable because he never missed. And then the ball just ricocheted down the other end and I was able to get on the end of it. So, yeah, it was great memories.
Do you feel like that first season, I think you played 20, 22 games and kicked 20-odd goals, do you feel like that your senior experience with Glenorchy prior to coming into the VFL system helped you develop quicker than most first-year players?
Oh, I've got no doubt. I've got no doubt about that. Going back and looking at the team that I played in with Glenorchy, I played 2 years. I made my debut there as a 15-year-old in 86. We won the premiership. So I played in that premiership. I just turned 16. They were really good players. The blokes that I was really fortunate enough to play with, they were gun state league players. I think that education that I got playing with those men, and then we played in the grand final like in the next year and lost, but played with some really, really good, hard, tough players and knowledgeable players, and I was really fortunate, I reckon. That definitely helped. You know, it's a huge step to go from state league footy to the VFL / AFL, but I sort of felt like I've been playing with men for a while, so... and you know what it's like. I think the younger you are, the more naive you are. So you tend not to stress too much. You just go and play.
Poor kick though to half forward. Watson put under pressure by Campbell. Obst again. Beautiful play to Steins. Steins on the level. Level straightens up and taps it through for a champagne football goal.
Mentioned before about the 88 grand final. You know, the Hawks were bloody awesome that day. They just as you said, a great dynasty for a number of years. What are your reflections from that day like to make it certainly an achievement? Because, you know, you look at a lot of careers of AFL blokes, VFL blokes, they never got the chance to play in the last Saturday in September. And despite it not going your way, to get there and to experience grand final must have been still pretty memorable, you know, when you look back at your career.
Yeah, look, definitely, Kenny. It was, I'll never forget the moment when we're in the change rooms, because you arrive at the ground early and the crowd's starting to build, but you don't get a sense of just how big the occasion is, because you walk in with your bag and you get your gear on, but you can feel the noise building outside in the change rooms, and you can sense it, but you don't really get a feel. And we lined up to run out, and they opened the door of the race, and it just, the noise and the atmosphere just came smashing down that race into the change rooms, and it just hit us like a ton of bricks. And I'll never forget that moment. And to walk down the race and then run out through the banner is something that you just can't describe, and I'll never forget that. The other not sure if I should talk about this, but the other really strong memory I have, surprisingly, is the streaker. there was a streaker in the last quarter, and a friend of mine many years ago, I'd sort of forgotten about it, and then a friend of mine's mother sent me this framed photo of the last quarter. We were 80 points down. It was a centre bounce. I think there was Greg Deer from Hawthorn, Gary Buchanan, Steve O'Dwyer, Johnny Platten and myself, and Greg Healy, all in the centre bounce. The umpire's about to bounce the ball, and none of us had our eyes on the footy. We were all looking at it. It was a pretty funny moment in an otherwise bleak day.
We have a streaker here at the moment of the female persuasion. 1982, all over again. And just like in 1982, we have a streaker on the ground, a lady. I think she's a lady.
Two of the boys in the centre managed to smile.
Well, at least this time the game was well won when she came on, because when she came on in 82, not the same one, I don't think, it really stopped Carlton, who were on a roll, and they nearly threw her off bodily, the players.
Just had a call from Don Scott. He assures us it wasn't the same streak.
I guess looking at your stat lines and games played over the next few seasons, you probably didn't play as many games as you would have liked. I know you had a pretty severe leg injury in 89. Did that affect you over that period to sort of get back and back playing as good a footy as you did in the first couple of seasons?
Yeah, it did. And I reflect back on it now, and you know, I had a lucky enough to have a really, really strong year in my first year. And I think that there was always, and you'll understand this and appreciate this, there was lots of talk back then about second-year blues. And everyone talked about young players getting the second-year blues. And so I was really determined that that wouldn't happen to me. So I just never stopped training. I think I had 3 or 4 days off after the grand final and then just trained non-stop. And I ended up getting glandular fever. And then I lost way too much weight. I became far too lean. And then I tore my quad off the bone in round one of that 89 year and didn't recover. I re-tore it 3 times trying to make it back. I think I may have come back for a reserves game at the end of the season, but I missed the entire year. Physically, I recovered pretty well over the pre-season, but mentally I was shot. And I just lost all my confidence and self-belief. But I remember the 90 season, I think I played the first 10 games and then broke my foot against North Melbourne at the G, and missed the next 12 weeks with a broken foot. So that was the end of that year. 91, I may have played 5 or 6 games, I think, but I did my ankle badly twice, so I missed the majority of that year. I think I might have made it back for the finals that year. In 91, but I hadn't played. I couldn't get a kick at all, and I'd lost total belief and confidence. And at 91, I think we played Essendon in a final out at Waverley, and I kicked 4, But I think that may have been the catalyst for me to start to believe that maybe I did belong and that I could get back. Three pretty lean years. But that game against Essendon out at Waverley, when I was able to kick a few, I think that's what sort of set me up for the next year.
And you had a great year in 92, obviously featured high in the best and fairest and so forth. But I'm really interested, as you said, you sort of got back to being a regular staple in the team, and you featured in a very talented midfield group. You know, what was it like working alongside Jimmy Steins, Glenn Lovett, Viney, Tingay, some of these guns that were just great ball winners, but, you know, great Melbourne people as well?
Yeah, it was a real honour and a privilege to play with those blokes and, you know, Gary Lyon, Brett Lovett, Rodney Grinter, you know, the list goes on. They're an awesome group of blokes and players, and I'm still great mates. Glenn Lovett was best man at my wedding. Stephen Tingay, I still keep in really regular contact with, and Toddy Viney. Yeah, all those guys, mate. It was a real honour. And, you know, we did have a good year. 94, we had a great year, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about. But we just couldn't quite get back. We just lacked that bit of consistency, and you know, there were some great teams around at the time. You know, I think that era, sort of 92, 94, West Coast, they were the dominant team in the competition. So we were talented, but we just, yeah, for one reason or another, we just couldn't quite get it together when we needed to right at the end.
Looking back at those previous three seasons where you had those injury issues and so forth, and I guess, you know, we play footy and team sports for team success, but you finished runner-up in the best and fairest in the 92 season. You must have enjoyed that moment knowing that you were back playing some really good footy, and after a pretty tough 3 years, you sort of got the rewards after, you know, putting the hard work in and getting back and enjoying it again.
Yeah, it was. It was a really enjoyable year, and it was an understatement to say I needed it for my confidence. But I remember having a conversation pre-season with our head of conditioning, Chris Jones, really experienced phys ed at the time, been in footy for a long time, and had a really, really open and honest conversation with him, and one that I really needed. He challenged me big time, and he put it right back on me. You know, and he basically said, don't look to blame anyone if you're not playing senior footy. He said, get as fit as you can, give the selectors no other reason not to pick you. And so sort of took that advice, and it stood me in really good stead. So I was able to remain injury free, and I got into the team, and I just had this determination that I wasn't going to make any excuses, and I wasn't going to look to blame anyone. And that if I played well enough, they'd have to play me. And look, as it turned out, I did have a good year, and, you know, again, it was an honour. I got second to Glenn Lovett in the best and fairest, and who was in phenomenal form and a great player, played for Victoria. So, yeah, 92 was, I reflect back, and 92 was a really enjoyable year for me.
Gets it across towards Lovett. Brett Lovett kicks inside the 50. Storming up the ground is Darcy, reaching over the top almost to mark the pike. Charles away to Lovell. Lovell snaps. It looks pretty good. I think he's got it. He has. His third goal.
I guess, you know, you're looking at your latter part of your life where you were an assistant coach for a number of seasons at a number of AFL clubs, and I guess feedback and that sort of stuff's really, really important in the current format. Was there much of that, you know, with John Northey and the coaching staff, you know, during that time with where you had those injuries and maybe down on a little bit of confidence? Was the feedback and discussions there positive to ensure that, you know, you were still a very important part of the team and that, you know, they had still had strong belief in you?
You know, I'll preference it by saying Swoop and Northey was a great coach, and I loved him, and Neil Barmer, I loved Barmy as well. They were my two coaches at Melbourne throughout that period. But it was just a different time. That we didn't have many open chats, but you knew you were supported. You know, it's way different now. Like, you know, the two-way conversations and the level of feedback and the consistency of it is far superior now than it was back then. But don't recall having many real open conversations about that. But I felt supported by the club and by my teammates, and there's no doubt about that. And they showed faith in me, like they kept me around when I wasn't playing. So back then, I think it was, if they're not talking to you, they're happy with you. I think that's how it used to work back then. It's really interesting because I've coached for so long, and I've been on the other side of it now. I do realize, and I had a great catch up with Neil Baum down in Geelong when he first started down at the Cats, and with Stephen Wells, the recruiter, list manager, and we had a laugh because Barmy sacked me and traded me to West Coast at the end of 95. And anyway, we had lunch and it was a great catch-up. And I said to him, I said, mate, I understand how frustrating a player I must have been to coach because I was really inconsistent. But now, with the experience of being on the other side of it, what I realised is that I had no self-belief, and I didn't have a coping strategy with the mental demons that I had around my form, which led to my inconsistencies. You look now and you see there's so many strategies that players have to be able to cope with those mental demons. And my coping strategy was to try and play cool and make it look like I didn't really care that much. And I think that frustrated Barmy, and it definitely frustrated Gary Lyon and a few of my teammates. But the reality is it's a coping strategy, because underneath all that, I just never stopped stressing and thinking about my form and what I needed to do to get better.
Back in the 90s, Andy, I look at the rotations were very limited compared to what we see in the current format of the game. You know, if you're a midfielder, you'd probably rest forward, and you were one of those players that could go forward and kick goals. You know, you're a goal-kicking midfielder. You had the ability to accumulate the ball but also finish it really nicely. And I looked at some highlights the other night of that 8-goal haul against the Tigers in 93. Like, that's a great performance from, a midfielder to go and bang through eight.
I got given a couple. Alan Jakovich kicked eight too that day. And I think he might have given me a couple of Joe the Gooses just to get my tally up. It was a bit of a day out. We played really well, and I was lucky enough to get on the end of a few. But I wanted to be, like, I started as a small forward and I did love kicking goals, but you know what it's like. You strive for a bit more respect and you want to play midfield. And, you know, I had 3 or 4 years there where I was lucky enough to play as a regular mid, and then slot forward. Because you're right, we never rotated that much. You used to just go forward, which gave you an opportunity to take some shots. So it was a really memorable day. It didn't happen again, hence my inconsistency. But great. It was a great day.
Perhaps not much talking in the finish. Dyson has marked about 40 metres out directly in front, gives the short pass away, and Lovell has a chance to kick his 8th goal.
What's he got, 7 straight at the moment, is it, Bernie?
Yeah, 7 straight.
Lovell from just 30 metres, pretty well straight in front. He's hooked this kick, but I think he's got it through. It's a goal.
You just mentioned a little bit about it before, that at the end of 95, you headed to WA and went to the West Coast Eagles. I think it was a direct spot from Craig Turley, from memory. Pointed by the move in the end, were you happy to stay at the D's? Like, how did that all come about?
Yeah, it was a... Well, look, at the time, I'll tell you the story first. So end of 95, I was out of contract. I didn't have a manager. Back then, you didn't, you know, unless you were Gary Lyon, you didn't have managers. But so I went and met the footy manager at the time, and we had a bit of a chat. And I said, look, you know, this is what I want. Didn't ask for too much, to be honest. And then the next day, I was flying out with the boys to Bali on a footy trip. And the footy manager said, oh, well, leave it with me and I'll let you know. So I went away to Bali, and I was there for a couple of weeks. And I had a message at the hotel reception to call Trevor Nisbet from the West Coast Eagles. And I thought, geez, that's really strange. They were a juggernaut. They were a powerhouse at the time. They'd won 2 of the last 3 premierships, and everyone really respected them. Anyway, so I called Trevor Nisbet, and he just said, oh, look, you know, Mick Malthouse has asked me to call. He's a fan of yours. He would love you to come and play with us at West Coast. And I was pretty shocked. And I sort of said, look, I'm really flattered, but I want to be a one club player. I love the D's and all my mates are there and I want to stay at the D's. And he said, look, I respect that. No worries. The next night, I got another message at reception. Can you please ring Michael Malthouse from the West Coast Eagles? So I rang Mick and he said the same thing. And just as I was about to say what I said to Trevor Nisbet, he said, listen, I just need to tell you that Melbourne have already done the deal and Craig Turley signed with Melbourne. We just need you to agree for the deal to get done. And I was sort of like, oh, well, guess I'm coming to Perth. Look forward to it, Mick. I was shattered. I was shattered. There's no doubt about that. I wanted to be a one-club player and I love the D's. But in hindsight, it was the best move I could have ever made. And, you know, the West Coast Eagles are an unbelievable footy club. Trevor Nisbet and Michael Malthouse, I still consider great friends now. And the support they gave me, particularly when my dad got killed, I think the second year I was over there, the support that Trevor Nisbet and the footy club gave me, Brian Cook was the CEO, and my family, it was off the charts. So in hindsight, it was probably not great for my footy. I had a really good year the first year I was there. And then my father got killed halfway through the second year and it just sucked the life out of me, to be honest. And I think I retired at the end of the year after that and hardly played any more senior footy. It was a funny story, go to Bali, a Melbourne player, and come back a West Coast player.
Well, it's just funny. You look at the trading and all that now, obviously the players have a bit more say with their managers and so forth, but you're sort of, I guess, a bit blindsided there. Like, you know, obviously they made the call, but you sort of said no, and then all of a sudden you're there the next day. That's unbelievable how it's all been arranged.
Yeah, it was. And I was disappointed because I never heard from any official from the Melbourne Footy Club at all, ever again. And that disappointed me. But, over time, that wears off. And then I had a great catch-up with Barmy over lunch down in Geelong one day, and we had a laugh. And I think Barmy said, who did sack you? Who was that did that? And we had a bit of a chuckle. But it is what it is. And, I don't regret going because, at the end of that 98 season, Mick and Trevor sat me down and said, look, you won't get a game anymore, but we want you to come on as an assistant coach, which was an enormous experience for me, which I took with both hands. And then I was an assistant coach at four clubs for the next 22 years.
Mate, and that's the next part of my questioning is obviously coaching's been a big part of your journey and you've worked at so many great organisations. Like you've had some time at the Cats and the Saints and the Eagles and obviously the Gold Coast Suns. What's the thing you've enjoyed most about being an assistant coach and what's sort of been the most challenging thing you've come across as well during your journey?
Yeah. By far the most enjoyable part is the ability to work with young players and help them grow and develop and learn. I think that, the only reason you should ever coach is to help players get better. And you're right, I was really lucky to work at, four unbelievably good clubs under great coaches. Obviously, Mick Malthouse at West Coast, then Bomber Thompson at Geelong. Like, Bomber was at the height of his powers at that point. And then I had a year back at the D's while I was coaching Sandringham in the VFL. Dean Bailey was coached then and great fella and had great knowledge of footy. Dean Bailey, a really good development coach. The alignment, the Sandringham alignment changed from Melbourne to St Kilda. So I ended up there under Ross Lyon. Again, really fortunate and timing was really good. The Saints ended up, playing off in that grand final against Geelong in 2009 and then the drawn grand final in 2010 or in 2010 against Collingwood. So, I reflect back on the coaches that I had, Guy McKenna, Rodney Eade, Stewie Jew. So quite a few coaches, but, there's a lot of opinions around on Rossy Lyon, but Rossy Lyon was the most extraordinary coach that I learned more about coaching and more about the game in the 3 years that I had under Rossi than any. I learned lots under all of them, but Rossi Lyon was, yeah, tactically, and the way he analysed the game taught me, it set me up and really taught me, you know, how to coach the modern game, I reckon.
It's amazing when you reel off some of those names who you've actually worked under, like some of the best coaches of, you know, the modern era, you know, obviously, you know, premierships wise, but Bomber Thompson and Rocket Eade, who's been a grand final coach. Yeah, a lot of quality there.
Yeah. Yeah, I learned lots off all of them. And I think the, you know, one of the really obvious points that I learned is they were all very different, you know, and they all taught me that you've got to be your own man and that you've got to coach your way. You know, and they're all like Bomber Thompson was. He had this amazing ability to be able to take a young, inexperienced player and turn him into an AFL man. You know, Jimmy Bartel, James Kelly, Corey Enright, Max Rook, you know, the list, Cameron Ling, like the list goes on and on and on. You know, and Matty Scarlett in earlier days. Those guys that he took as young blokes and turned them into bona fide superstars was extraordinary. Mick Malthouse was a great motivator. You know, and a really great team coach. You know, and then, as I said, Rossi was tactically and analytically unbelievable. I've never seen a coach, be able to influence the outcome of a game from the coach's box as often as he did.
Not much time left for Collingwood to get out of this. Play on call, love it. Andy Lovell, 45 metres on the left boot. And he has kicked the sealer for the Demons. It's all over here at Victoria Park.
I'm going to give you a couple of quick handballs to finish our podcast chat, and I've just loved reflecting and listening to your journey, mate. So I'm going to give you four names, and I want you to just give me one word to describe these ex-teammates of yours. So the first one's Gary Lyon. One word to describe Gary Lyon.
Talented.
Rod Grinter.
Tough.
I'll go to West Coast. Drew Banfield.
Trojan.
And Brett Heddy.
Funny.
Probably has the best nickname too, just quietly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's right. I mean, I'd already used the word talented with Gazza. I mean, Gazza was just a supremely talented player. Brett Heddy was just so, you know, the word I should have used for Brett Heddy, brave. He's one of the bravest players I've ever seen. He'd just fly into a pack with no regard for his own sort of safety. And, you know, he was a brilliant player, as were all the others that you talked about. But Drew Banfield, Trojan, like his nickname's Trojan Horse. You know, just his work ethic was just off the charts. Ended up winning the best and fairest and playing in the premiership in 94. Great player and a ripping bloke.
Last one, who's the best character you've come across during your footy journey? And obviously there's a lot of people you would have had a beer with and a lot of banter, but who's the one that stands out that you just, when you catch up, it just feels like it was yesterday when you were, you know, having a beer and you know, spinning a bit of your crap?
Yeah, well, look, I can't split them and they're the dynamic duo, so they've got to stay together. But two of my ex-teammates, Paul Hopgood, Melbourne, Hoppy, and another ex-teammate of mine who went on and played a couple of games at North Melbourne, John Ahern, Hoppy and Horse. So they're the two greatest characters that I played with, and like they haven't grown up. They're both Peter Pans, even now, highly successful businessmen, and still do a lot of work for the Melbourne Footy Club. But I laugh more when I'm with those blokes than I do with anyone else in the world.
Who is the hardest opponent you come across? And obviously, you know, I think back of the 90s, like even on the midfield, you'd be up against some great midfielders. And then if you're rested forward, you're up against some great defenders. Who was the one that sort of you had some good battles with?
Well, I reckon that the toughest player, when I played forward, the toughest player to ever get a kick on was a bloke by the name of Bernard Toohey. That was early in my career. So he was playing at Sydney at the time. He was just so tough and he was so much bigger than me. Really hard. Again, Gavin Wanganeen was another one who just so quick. Really, really tough when I was playing forward to get a kick on him. In the midfield, like the two that spring to mind for me was Craig Bradley. I remember I had to tag Craig Bradley after half time in a game out of Waverley one day. And obviously I've never run as much in my life as I did in that half of footy. But probably the toughest in the midfield was Johnny Platton. I played on Johnny Platton a few times, and like they were just such an extraordinarily good team. And obviously he was just so tough because he was an in and under player. You just couldn't beat him.
Andy Lovell, been a great pleasure in reflecting on your footy journey. Thanks for jumping on the podcast for a chat, mate.
Thanks, Trent. I love the little trip down memory lane, mate. Really enjoyed it.
Out into the path of Lovell. Lovell will get a goal. He's kicked four. And if Melbourne are to win this game, Andy Lovell could nearly say he's played a match-winning part in the Demon performance.
That's the end of episode number 83. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. Next week, our guest is former Cat and Foundation Port Adelaide player, Shane Brewer.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.